Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Podcast. Thanks for joining me for another conversation. Thanks for downloading the show. Stoked to be with you for the next hour or so. This week's conversation is with Michael Taylor. Michael's an elite hand bike paracyclist and the winner of the New York City Marathon in that category. And yeah, in this conversation, it was really interesting for me to hear about what hand bike and paracycling is, how he got into it, and yeah, Michael's life and how much it's changed since he had a motorbike accident when he was 34 and lost use of his legs. It was really interesting to hear a bit about a different sport and just what it takes to be at the very top end of that sport and travel all over the world to compete. And yeah, really appreciate that Michael gave up a bit of his time to have a conversation with me and yeah, be pretty open and honest and shared a lot of his stories so far. Michael's super elite, 12 state titles, 9 national titles, 2 Oceania titles. He's been to the world champs on 3 occasions, and then, as I listed off before, has won the New York City Marathon, qualified for 2 Olympics, but wasn't selected to go. We kind of have a good conversation about that. And yeah, it was a real good insight into another sport, which is pretty relatable to distance running and endurance sports, and yeah, talking about heart rates and training pace and all those kind of things, which was quite interesting. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation today with Michael Taylor. A bit of general business at the end of the show if you want to stick around after the conversation for a bit more audio there. Enjoy this chat, guys. Cheers. Michael Taylor, welcome to Tell Me Your Tales podcast. Welcome to my home in Moama.
Thank you very much. Lovely drive up here.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting your relationship with Moama, because it's the very first... I met you in Moama about 2 years ago at the Chuka Moama Sports Star of the Year Award.
Yes.
At that stage, I'd never heard of you in my life. And then I heard you'd won one of the monthly awards. I'd won one of the monthly awards.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a strange one. Yeah, you get nominated and you think, oh, it's a great honour.
Yeah.
Which it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you do get to meet some great people along the way.
Mm.
So yeah.
Well, it was amazing because I was blown away by your story a bit, and I was just like, well, haven't I heard of this guy before? And probably because
different
of the connection.
Circles.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Well, it's same area, same thing, but slightly different tangent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny though, because I think never heard of you in my life, saw you and met you at that month, and we actually spoke that day about doing a podcast, which has just gone
I think you're a bit blown away.
2 years?
One
year. It was 1 year ago, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's taken us a while to hook this one up, but it's funny because I think the week after that I was in Bendigo and I was driving home and I was driving past a big group of cyclists and I spotted you down low and I thought, I've never seen this guy in my life, and all of a sudden, you know, Monday night and then Sunday morning, I spotted you in the group.
Once you see the bike and, like, yeah, or me in the bike, it's not that you notice, but you go, oh, there he is. I didn't notice, but I did.
Mm.
And it's just something that's a little bit different.
Yeah, you're right, because I probably have seen that group, you know, 5 or 10 times before, but I wasn't kind of looking out for you. And then all of a sudden, you're on my radar after that sportsman's night.
Yeah, kind of like something clicks, you go, Oh, I know someone who was like, oh, that's him. Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Beautiful, mate. Would you want to introduce yourself to the audience, the listeners? Give us a bit of a
brief about who you are. I'm a T3 paraplegic. I ride a specialised paracycling bike called a hand cycle. I get to race nationally, domestically, internationally. Won a couple of events here and there. I enjoy riding. I live in Bendigo, but I race for a Chukamauama. I find them to be a fantastic club for me.
Yeah, right. Why Chukamauama? Why are they a fantastic club for you?
When we were living in Melbourne, and then my wife wanted a sea change, so we moved to Kerrang.
Yeah, right.
And the closest club to me then was a Chukamauama. I just rang them up. They said, yeah, sure, come on over. And they, just the way they accepted me, you know, not a drama, not an issue. What can we do to help? And just the support they've given me. And since we've been from Kerrang, we moved to Bendigo. And it's a funny thing. Like I ride with a lot of guys in the Bendigo Club, but it's a different scenario if I want to race with the Bendigo Club.
Ah, right.
And I've got to bring my own support vehicle, and which just creates headaches. So whereas I can just rock up to a Chuka, don't get me wrong, I quite enjoy it. Quite a lot of times I used to just drive up in the morning.
Yeah.
Leave home at 4:35 o'clock in the morning. Come to the 6 o'clock ride, 6:30 ride. Just to catch up. I enjoyed it.
A bit more chilled out, the crowd, the group in Echuca compared to Bendigo?
Friendly?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A few less egos?
Yeah.
Not as many Bendigo's got some big name cyclists. That's the only reason I ask.
Yeah, no. Look, it's clicky. Everyone gets along. It's a funny thing, you know. And even in the groups that I ride, everybody chats, but not everyone gets along. And it's kind of... I'm kind of like the odd one out because I'm in a different bike.
Mm.
And the guys don't usually see me in the wheelchair. It's only they see me in the bike. So for the first 2 years, no one spoke to me.
Yeah, right.
So I'd ride these groups on a Saturday. And I'd go home to the wife and I'd be like, she's like, oh, how'd you go today? I said, no one spoke to me. And it's like tail between the legs.
Yeah.
And it took forever. And then I spoke to a gentleman, Eddie Barclay. And I just said, look, and he runs a big email and he's big in cycling and kind of joins all the dots, you know what I mean, you know? And I had a chat to him, I said, man, what am I doing wrong, mate, you know? And then he had a chat to somebody else, and since then it's just clicked in the groups that I ride.
Yeah.
And then I suppose it's just a bit more awareness, acceptance. Not by everyone. There's a few who are a bit anti, don't like my bike.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because I don't offer a draft because the bike's so low.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a different visual. For like, if you're a bike rider following someone, you're not... You're not as high as a normal bike.
Yeah.
So you're lost. So they've got to look at a little bit, a few differences. And my bike's wider.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've got a fat ass.
Yeah.
The bike's wide, you know. So I tend to sit on the outside of the bunch. So it gives me a bit of room to get out of their way as well, you know. And some people just, I don't know, they just don't like it.
Yeah.
For some reason, you know. And as much as you try and explain to them, it's in my best interest to know where you are, so I'm going to stay out of your way, they're just not comfortable. And you can understand that. That's okay. But it's just, it's just one of those funny things that goes on in cycling, I guess.
What about, like, do you have to concentrate more? Like, you're lower to the ground and you're using your arms compared to them using their legs and stuff. You're at a different height. Like, is it hard to generate conversation with the guys? It must feel like they're much higher up.
If they're like a normal bike rider and they're just facing front and riding away, I'm straining my ears to go, what?
Yeah.
And half the time, it's just, no idea what I'm agreeing to.
Yeah.
They just sold me house. No idea. But as soon as they like turn their head and talk, sounds really bad, talk down to them.
Yeah, to your level. Yeah.
You can have not a bad conversation.
Mm.
If you get a real rough patch of road, because the way the bike is, my head is almost in between the rear back wheels. So you get a lot of bouncing and vibration and whatnot. So sometimes it gets a bit, oh, okay, we won't talk now for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you'll get some person who doesn't say too much to you at all until you get to a hill where I've got to work really, really hard. Then he wants to strike up a conversation. I'm shut up.
Yeah.
I'm trying to work it. He's keen to have a chat. You think, my God, couldn't you have picked it up going downhill on the flat? But no, as soon as you start going uphill, and you're
going really, over One Tree Hill or something back in Mandurang over there.
Oh, usually, usually a guy, and he used to be coming on the way home, going up the McIver Highway.
Yeah.
And it was such a strain. And it's like, my God, the bunch is getting away from me. I've got to work. Don't talk to me now. And as soon as you got to the, like, we turn off at the top, where are you? Can't see him for dead. Can't shout him up the hill.
Yeah.
As soon as you turn off, nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
And you think, oh my God, killing me.
Yeah. So just some clarification around like hand cycle, paracycle, and wheelchair racing, like completely different sports.
Two different
classifications.
The track chair is fixed wheels.
Yeah.
So, and you hit with your fists, so to speak. So you either kneel in the bike or you could sit in the bike, depending on how you feel comfortable. And you're literally punching the wheel, punching the rim. And it's where you see the best example, I suppose, is Kurt Fearnley.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, doing the marathon or on the track.
Yeah.
He's probably, or Louis Sauvage, you know, the people who you go, oh, I don't know what bike that is now.
Yeah.
Whereas a hand bike is, again, three wheels. Two at the back, one at the front, but we have gears just like a bike.
Yeah.
So two brakes, gears, and we lay down in more like a recumbent style.
Yeah.
But there are different versions as well. So if you're an amputee, you kneel in your bike.
Yeah.
So So I suppose they're just trying to make it a level playing field for each category.
Mm.
So yeah.
And how many gears would you be rolling through?
It's quite a, like, per race or just on the
bike? No, like, just so how many is on the bike, like the setup?
It's 2x11 speed.
Yeah, okay.
So, and it's exactly the same as like a normal bike, like a race bike.
Just controlling it with your arms.
Yeah. And it's just, you're modifying the technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially now with DIT, electronic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot better, easier. And for people who, the quads, who struggle with hand functionality, the things they can do now with their elbows for the gearing is so much better. It just made life simpler for this application.
Yeah, right. And like, do you have a speedo as well on there?
Yeah,
and
so
there's a bit going on.
The sad part of it is, I mean, you've got this garment, and it's like sitting smack in front of your face.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, so you can't hide from it, you know? And you've got all your data that you have, and you have power and speed and watts and cadence and time of day and whatever. But yeah, literally, it's in front of your face. So as you're cranking along, heart rate's going through the roof, or it's all there. All the relevant information's there.
Yeah. And kind of a bit more in the data sense of things, because it really interests me. Like, what kind of k's per hour are we kind of averaging? And
for a time trial, which is what we qualify in.
Okay.
I suppose between the 39 and 40 k an hour.
Yeah, right. And distance, how long's the time trial?
In Australia, we're a bit of a weird mob, we are. Yeah. But in Australia, for some reason, we like to do around that 20 to 22 kilometre mark.
Yeah.
In Europe, they do 12 to 15, 16 k's.
Yeah.
Don't know why. But we only qualify in a time trial.
Yeah.
So if we do a road race, do well, doesn't really mean anything. But if we do a time trial, as long as it's in the qualifying period, the selectors will, ooh, what's he done? Ooh, hello.
Yeah, okay.
So we don't, a road race is nice to win.
Yeah.
But it doesn't qualify us for anything.
Yeah, right.
So it's the time trial is what it's all about for us.
Mm. Yeah. And that'd be pretty exhausting, wouldn't it? Like averaging that kind of, like just generating that kind of speed with your arms. Like you just look at you, you can see the upper body strength.
The worst thing is you do, your time trial might take you, you know, 40, maybe 45 minutes. Your warm-up's like 35, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So your warm-up's as long as your race. And yeah. then you've got to cool down, yeah, and then you've got to go home, have the ice bath, a shower, and you think, oh, is that great? But yeah, you're pretty, I mean, if you're not exhausted, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not laying it all out on the road, and you come back, oh, mate, I've got another 10Ks. What are you doing wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, you haven't gone hard enough.
Yeah.
And especially if you haven't put in the qualifying time.
Yeah.
You know, and you haven't won, you go, well, why didn't you go harder?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and that's how they look at it. Yeah, you know? They just, and that's something you've got to get used to.
Yeah, who's know? They? Like an international
Cycling Australia.
Yeah, okay. Oh, so it's all under Cycling Australia.
Yeah, yeah. Cycling Australia set a, every year they set a standard.
Mm.
So they say if you reach this mark, you qualify for Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go into the selection pool. Doesn't mean they'll take you. Found that out the hard way.
Yeah, I have read your resume and I've noticed that with a couple of Olympics here and there. So, we'll get into that later on.
You get so... I did a deal for the devil last year and... Yeah?
What kind of heart rates and stuff as well? You kind of average into those things?
About 185?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're
in
right
comparison
up there.
To running kind of stuff. You are, yeah.
You are,
I just wanted to let the listeners know. Like,
yeah. I mean, you go, like, New York was a great one.
Yeah.
Because, like, you'd sit, and you probably want to touch this later, but it's actually a good segue to it. It's such a long build up to the start of the race.
Mm.
Yeah, the race starts at 8:45. But you'd leave your hotel at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Because they bush you out there in New York, too, don't
well,
they?
Well, you've got to load your bike up the day before.
Yeah.
And then you take your helmet and your gear. So I'm rolling around New York City, 4:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, going past all these nightclubs and think, oh, my God, what's going to happen to me?
Yeah.
And I did. I thought, oh, panic stations. Where's a copper when I need one? And no joke, people just got out of my way.
Yeah.
Yeah, no worries. Oh, yeah, no worries. Okay. They're really so nice. And here's me, little Aussie bloke, panicking. Thinking, I'm not going to let him make it to the start line. And then you get to the part where they're going to pick you up and you think, am I in the right area? Yeah, I'm here. Okay, cool. And then it just takes so long to get out there. You know? But getting back to the heart rate, we're sitting on the start, right at the start line. And my heart rate was, because I've been sitting around for a while, 59.
Mm, yeah.
And from when I went go to the top of the hill, which is literally, you start at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, I've seen some footage before the start in New York.
Yeah, and right up to the top, my heart rate at the top was 202.
And you're talking like a kilometre in? Like, how long was it taking to get to the top of the hill? Yeah, 1K in.
1K in bank, full gas.
What goes?
Full gas, all the way over the top. And literally about three quarters of the way out, I saw a Colombian coming, two of them coming along. I think, oh, great, I'll back off a little.
Yeah.
And just as they caught me, I surged again and literally just redlined the whole lot.
So you're out in front at this stage, like there's 40,000 participants waiting to 50,000. Start. 50,000.
Yeah, it's capped at 50,000.
They let their hand cycles off first and then...
The track chairs go first.
Track chairs, then
they
hand cycles.
15 minutes on us.
Yep.
And then they let us off.
Yeah.
And
how many people in the field?
I think it was 97.
Yeah.
And it's an open field.
Yeah.
So normally we're not racing, we race in categories.
Yeah.
But being a marathon, it's open.
Yeah.
So it's open slather.
Yeah.
So it's, if you get a great start, fantastic. Now, I think that's the key to it.
Why is that there? You're 42K. Like, can you not come back from it, or you got to get in a good position draft or?
Bit of both.
Yeah.
The week before we raced in Washington and did the Marine Corps Marathon, and thought we got there in plenty of time, but actually by the time I got to the start line, there was like 30 guys already lined up. So you're like, fifth in line.
And each chair would be quite long in length,
wouldn't
it?
Yeah, you're about 2 metres.
Yeah.
But it's not just that, but like if the guy who's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 up front gets a bad start, the next guy's gone bang into him and slows him down.
Mm.
And it's just a knock-on effect.
Yeah.
So you kind of, not everyone takes off the same.
And no room to kind of move.
Because you literally, you're cramped in.
Yeah.
It's like elbows to elbow, you know, wheel to wheel.
Yeah.
And once you get past that, it was kind of like, okay, once it opens up a little, you know, you just gas it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And two different starts. Washington was a downhill start. New York was an uphill start.
Yeah, right.
So in Washington, you could really open up really early. And I think we went from 40th to 8th within kilometer.
Yeah.
And then you settle down, find your rhythm, and then you start looking around going, okay, hit it, start picking people yeah. off, you know. And it's funny, you know, like, you know what it's like. You've raced internationally.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody swears in the same language.
Yeah.
All right. Let's not kid, you know, all the listeners know about it. It's a bit of argy-bargy out there. And our bikes take up real estate.
Yeah.
And I was dueling with a French-Canadian guy who I know well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know really well. And we've raced before. And obviously, well, he wasn't feeling too flush. And every time I took a turn, you know, gas it up, and we'd be chasing down the guys in front, and then his turn to do a turn, and then we'd slow down. Mm. So we had a bit of a exchange of words,
yeah.
A bit of an English lesson,
yeah,
yeah, a bit of sign language going on, a bit of English going on, and after the race, it was kind of like, yeah, we'd finished, and there was a bit of a human error at the end. Now we had a kilometre to go, and we got to the last turnaround, and there was no one standing there to tell us where to go.
Yeah, right.
So instead of turning like around here, we've gone straight.
Yeah.
And like I had 100 metres on that guy, and he had 100 metres on the next guy, and we've all gone straight through. And by the time we all turned around, so then the order's reversed. Oh, no. So I went from third to sixth within a minute.
Yeah, right.
And it wasn't a minute, like, oh, they've got at any of our faults, you know? Yeah. It's just the way it goes, and you cross the line, and for the first 5 minutes, everything under the sun, I couldn't stop swearing.
Yeah.
And then yeah, you calm down, you go, okay, it happens, you know? Yeah. And it
perspective.
Does. Yeah, no, you do. Once your frustration's all done,
yeah,
and you've calmed down, because you have to calm down, you got to let it out. You calm down, and you go, crap, that happens. Oh, look, it's an accident. Oh, I know the guy didn't mean it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens.
Just a volunteer, you know what I mean?
Exactly, like, yeah. That. And for a good cause. And yeah. You just think, oh, look, that's the way it goes. Wake up, you crumbles.
Yeah, so this was the week before New York.
That was the week before.
A bit of confidence, a bit of frustration kind of.
Oh, well, look, I felt really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was riding around Washington in the mornings. Every morning I got lost.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding you. The first morning I was following these guys on a bike. I think, oh, where'd they go? You know, oh, they've gone down here from. Oh, no, I've got a set of steps here.
Yeah.
I couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I was stuck, yeah. So I had to wait for some two guys on a bike. Excuse me, don't stab me. Can you help me get out of here?
Australian accent coming in here. Yeah,
they're coming fantastic. Oh, where are you from?
Yeah.
Australia. Yes, we help you.
Yeah.
And they were fantastic, but every morning I got lost.
Yeah.
And it was around the same area, because you go around all the monuments.
Yeah.
And lovely place to ride. And once you find where you're going to, it was a great area, lots of runners,
yeah,
lots of riders going around there, but it's just, yeah, I just got lost every day.
So then, like, back to New York, so you've gone out hard, the heart rate's at 200,
just
half a K1, you got 41K to go, what's going through your head, and, like, were you expecting to win that day? I've kind of given away for all the listeners, but, you know, yeah, you've won that category.
But not at all. Like, we had a great showing in Washington, so I was really confident and felt really good. Like, I had a long big training block, yeah, during winter over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, -2, -4 out there, and I was smashing it. I felt really, really good. So when we got there, I was thinking, the aim was top five.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of an unknown, because usually it's longer than our time trials, and it's shorter than our road races.
Yeah, okay.
Now, our road races go up to about 85K.
Yeah.
So it's shorter than a road race. So it's kind of like, how do you tackle it?
Mm.
Yeah. So I was a bit, well, I don't know. Yeah. So once we got over the hill, it's kind of like, oh, I won't swear too much, but it's like crap.
Feel free. Yeah.
And it's like crap. What do I do? I'm thinking, I could slow down and wait for these two Colombians, or I can just gas it and get a gap and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it was funny. I was talking to my wife. because they come over, the family, yeah, my wife and daughter came over, because you got to take pit crew. You can't just, the bikes don't just carry themselves.
Yeah.
Wheels, luggage, all the rest of it. And we were chatting about something, yeah, and there's different scenarios. And I said, you know, up until the start line, or up until the hill, I still had no idea. And it was only opportunity opened up. And I thought, fuck it, I'm going to have a crack now. I really, I thought, I've got this far.
It's a long way to go for a race as well.
It is, I may not go back.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, look, bugger, I've gone, the Colombian, as soon as they caught me and I gassed it again, they dropped right off. So I thought, I wasn't too sure, to be honest, what was going on there.
What stage of the race is this? Like,
this is like
20k in, 30k?
No, this is at the top of the hill.
Oh, this is okay.
This is right at the start.
Wait, the heart rate's still at 200.
Yeah. It's like, what's going on? Quick thinks. Yeah, figure things out. And then, no, let's just go. So it was like just head down and literally bang up a couple of gears. And once I got over the crest, literally, it's like as quick as I could, flat gas, try and get the heart rate down a bit.
Yeah.
Because I thought, oh man, I'm going to die, crash and burn. Yeah. I did. I just showed up, can I get it down to about 180?
Yeah.
It ain't going to last long at all. But think of a big diesel engine, you know, I can get it around 180, 185.
Yeah.
And push that power out.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know what it's like, if you get too high,
it's hard to come back to.
Oh, it's just, yeah, and the lactate acid
starts
to build, and you're starting to think about other things. And
yeah.
So got the heart rate back down, so that was manageable. I think we managed, I think it was 187 for the race.
Yeah.
And then we just cruised, along. I was like, you had a pace car.
Yeah.
So wherever they sat, and they were about 100 metres in front, I just literally followed them. So I had no idea of the route.
Yeah. And the crowds, like, are they amazing?
Oh, it's great.
I've only heard good things about New York.
Oh, look, Washington was good. They're not chalk and cheese, but they're different.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you start, like, at Washington, being a Marine Corps marathon, you sit there, the Star Spangled Banner, it's all military people. You're going, it's right at the start of Arlington Cemetery.
Yeah.
Go, bang, big cannon goes off, jump a mile, think, what was that? we're off, crap, damn, yeah. It was, the adrenaline's pumping, you know. And New York was like, okay, because you've been sitting around a lot longer than I did the week before. Okay, and then literally they crawl you out to the start line, such a stalwart pace, there's no warm up.
Mm.
So all you can do is stretch. And all of a sudden we got to where the bottom of the bridge, and the ladies made a mistake and go, oh, no, we got to go here, which is just where I was. So oops, straight on the front. Fantastic spot.
Yeah.
And it is, it's luck. So, but when you get going, it's, I reckon it'll be every couple of Ks there's a band playing.
Yeah.
And
the different boroughs and stuff, like, you notice.
I got asked that right at the end.
Yeah.
The lady who, the secretary of the New York Runners Club, came up and she was chatting away. She said, oh, so what did you think of all the boroughs?
What boroughs?
I had no idea. My head was down.
My heart rate was at 185.
The only thing I noticed, I couldn't tell what. Do you know what? This is going to sound really, really bad. I don't mean it to be. Mm. Right, but the Jewish people with the long hair, the curly.
Yep, coming out of the hats. Yep.
They're the only ones I saw.
Yeah.
And like, as in, you really noticed.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what borough that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a couple of things they tell us, when you pump your tyres up, don't go too hard.
Yeah.
Look out for the manhole covers.
Yeah.
And my God, they are everywhere.
Yeah.
I've never seen so many manhole covers. I mean, we raced in Canada a few years ago, and there was a lot there. But New York, I thought I'd dodge one. I found two others. I think, just don't puncture.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when we've got about 30Ks in, I'm thinking, not now. Just don't puncture now. And that was going through your mind.
So at that stage, you looking back and stuff to try to get a glimpse of where,
I was trying. After 10K, we really settled into a rhythm, pushing away. Then you go over the Brooklyn Bridge. And you go from this big crowd, and it's... bands pumping out music, and you think this is great. Coppers going, yo, that's in the hand, coffee.
Yeah.
That was funny. And then also you go over the bridge and you go, it's quiet. And you're not used to it.
Yeah.
And you got the TT helmet on, which He's quiet.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, and what's this noise? I can hear a noise. Oh, no. Oh, it's like a puncture.
Yeah.
And you're going across a road that gets iced on. So their road has slots across it. So as you go across the road, it breaks up the ice. And I'm trying to figure out, I reckon halfway going up this bridge, going, I've got a puncture. Do I need to stop? Please don't tell me I've got to stop. What's this noise? Because it's so quiet.
Yeah.
And there's no crowd, no nothing. And it took me, literally, it took me forever to figure out, it has to be these little lines across the road. I think, I feel okay now.
That's what you're hitting, yeah.
Yeah, you are. And you're hitting at a fair pace, you know. And you get over the bridge, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, here's my car sitting there, my motorbike copper, follow him, yep. Oh, where are we going now? Oh, we've got a brake line on. Brake light. Oh, my God, there's a big hairpin down the bottom here. Hit the brakes, don't. And you see all those hay bales. You know, I can see why they're there. And so you turn around there, and that was about, I don't know, halfway, about 20K in.
Yeah.
And that was the scariest part, because I didn't know there was a big turn there. Mm. Had no idea.
Study the course map the night before.
It's different. Because you're on it, you don't. And you're doing, like, you know, you're going downhill. So I'm hitting, like, 75K an hour.
Mm. Yeah, 75K.
So I'm not doing, like, running pace.
Yeah.
I'm smacking it out.
15 or 20K an hour. Yeah,
so you're really, all of a sudden, you know, a lot of things going through your head going, oh, yeah, just find me lead vehicle. No, what's your brake lights on for? Oh, my, oh, shit, oh, brake. Oh, they hit it. Get in the corner.
Yeah.
Then accelerate again. So there's a lot of things that go through your mind really quick.
Mm.
Cause,
well, your race, you won it in an hour 23. Like,
yeah, it's a bit slow.
But in saying that, compared to marathoners where it's, you know, 2 hours 10, the winner might be, or 2 hours 8, or, yeah.
Yeah, it's different. I felt really bad afterwards. Yeah.
What, telling everyone you'd finished it in an hour 23?
Well, we'd finished and we'd gone back to the hotel. Then we went out shopping. You know, we went to markets and whatnot. And then we come back to the hotel, get some lunch.
Yeah.
And people still are coming in. Oh, how'd you go? We're in the elevator. How'd you go? Did you have a great race? How'd you feel?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long did it take you? Oh, 6 hours. Well done. Fantastic. I go, how'd you go? Yeah, I did okay. Did all right, yeah? So how'd you go? Oh, one. You won. Fantastic.
Yeah.
What'd you do it in? And they're going, 6 hours. I think, oh, 1 hour, 23. What? You're kidding me. Seriously? They go, yeah. And you felt really bad.
Yeah.
It's not that you won, but you just felt, oh, my God. Yeah. And here's me pumping them up saying, oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And you did it and all day. Yeah. It was great. It's the amount of camaraderie.
Mm.
Blows you away. It really does. And like, just giving the lift. I've never seen these people in my life. How'd you go? Did you have a great race? Did you enjoy it? Oh, I loved it. Yeah. It was really, really great. You know, and people from all over the world.
Yeah.
Didn't matter what language.
Yeah.
How'd you go? Oh, good. Yeah. You know, these Japanese people. Oh, hello. Oh, 6 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. You know, it's funny, you know. But when they ask you, you go, oh, I can't tell you I did an hour and a half. You know, no, I can't do that.
What stage did you know you had it sewn up? Can you remember? Like, was there a distinctive moment you thought, okay?
Once I hit Manhattan.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was looking and looking and looking, and it's hard because lots of shadows.
Yeah.
Lots of shadows. And I just kept following my motorbike copper. And I'm thinking, oh, wherever you go, I'm going, you know? And my mirror's like, if that's, bit of a visual, but that's my Garmin.
Yeah,
my mirror's here, so
above your Garmin. Yeah,
so you're looking, you can see straight over your helmet at all times, you know. And you're just going, oh, can I see? Oh, is that someone there? And it's a bit of a mind game, because you're in these, the buildings cast such big shadows, you're really straining to look at. Don't know. Go harder.
Same time you're on 60K down the
road. Yeah. And you're trying to negotiate these manhole covers, and there's all those police barricades up everywhere. Yeah, so you don't want to hit a copper. I'll probably get under a barricade. Miss the manhole covers. Look out for people behind you, like if anyone's coming, and then keeping an eye on, you know, what's going on in front of you, like on your speedo and all this. Mm. But once we hit Manhattan, I knew where I was, because we were staying there, not far from Central Park.
Central Park, yeah.
So we trained there every day. So once I got to that area, I think, I know where I am now. Okay, relax, not relax, but I knew where I was.
Start to enjoy it a bit, like.
Oh, once I hit Central Park.
That's when it was like, I'm going to win the New York Marathon. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. You can blow a tire. I'm getting home.
Yeah.
The only dodgy part, and it was kind of like, instead of goosebumps coming out, it was a fantastic experience. When we turned into Central Park, it wasn't where I was expecting. It was a really sharp turn. I almost tipped the bike over.
Yeah, okay.
I thought, oh, I don't lose it now. And because you don't know, you're still looking behind.
Yeah.
But once I hit Central Park, I thought, no, I'm home and host here. This is great. And the surface in Central Park's nice and smooth. Mm. It's like hot mix.
Yeah, okay. For us, you know? Yeah.
So, and because I've been training around there every day, I know where I am. Okay, no worries. You can go hard here. Yep, look, can't see well. And you really could soak it up. I mean, you've got all the grandstands are full.
Mm.
The guy on the speaker system, you can hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah, here you go, Michael Taylor from Australia. And you go, fuck, how good is this? And, oh, look, sorry, but you really, it's an emotional last couple of Ks.
Yeah.
And when they were giving us the briefing, when you finish, like everyone, you finish on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
I don't know why they just do. And when I'm coming out, they're telling me to go to the left-hand side. And then I'm going to the right. But the finishing baton was on the left.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, oh, where do I go? Yeah, I said, oh, so I went to the right. Because you don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Cross the line. Oh, yeah. Shed a tear, I can tell you now.
Yeah.
It was such an emotional. But the last section coming up the hill, because you're flat gas coming down the hill, and then you got this little rise.
Yeah.
It's not a big rise.
I've seen it on the footage and stuff. Just kind of gradual.
Just a gradual. And it's not enough to really dig. Oh, it is because you're buggered. But it's just enough to take the wind out of your sails.
Mm.
Yeah. And I'd hate to have a sprint finish.
Mm.
A bit of a pain in the ass, you know. But, and I think that's the idea of it, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's just being able to soak it up by yourself.
Mm.
It was great. And I suppose for me, on a personal level, it was great having the family there.
Mm.
Like, they don't get to see me. Oh, they're overseeing the racing, you know. They travel around years ago. But when we went over there, and they actually got to be right at the finish line. So as I crossed the line, they were right there. So that was such an emotional roller coaster for me to have them there as well. And the finish food was definitely unexpected.
Mm.
And my wife was with another American lady whose husband was racing.
Yep.
So she was on the phone app.
Oh, yeah, tracking it.
And she said, he's leading. She said, no, it must be something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's leading. And so, yeah, everyone's all excited.
Yeah.
Like the people we were with are all excited. So, yeah, no, it was really, really good, you know. And then you don't know what to do. You cross the line and everyone's photos and everyone wants to say hello. And then we get ushered out.
Yeah.
Then it's the downside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then there's no dice, no presentation.
Yeah.
We get ushered out, off the course, out the back, into a street, because you need chairs and where they're going to park. And that was basically it.
So why is that? Like, I'm a massive fan of running, and I had to do a bit of research just to understand the hand bike stuff today. Yeah. Like, I suppose without the Kurt Fernley profile for the wheelies, like, I probably wouldn't have known a lot about that in the first place. Like, does it sometimes?
It's a funny one because, like, and especially between the, I don't think the hand bikes, but I think the guys in the track chairs who do the marathons don't like the hand bikes.
Yeah.
I think how they look at it is a hand bike is a bike and a track chair is running.
Okay. So using a bike on a running course, they look at it that way.
But my argument is, well, it's not even an argument, what I say to people who say that to me is, like, I don't put the event on.
Yeah.
I said, you know, New York Roadrunners put the event on.
And
I
they just let enter us it. In. Yeah.
I just enter it. I didn't ask him to put it on. It's been going a long time.
Yeah.
And they just say, oh, yeah. But I said, look, you can't argue. Yeah, you can have a discussion about it. It's not worth arguing over, but it's a touchy one.
Mm.
Yeah, because the guys in the track chair certainly do a big job. It's a hard gig for them as well.
Mm.
But it's just different.
Mm. What kind of time do they do it in comparison? Like an hour 23 for you, is that...
Well, I was catching them.
Yeah, I've got to say, were you coming through them during the race?
So, and it's funny, like, I never realised, as you're coming through, they've also got a guy on a bike navigating them.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that in big races before.
There you go, yeah. And I didn't know. So I'm going, it's a guy on a bike, try and dodge out of his way, the other guy on a track chair. And so you're catching the back of the field, I reckon about 25k in.
Yeah.
You start working your way through them. I shouldn't say them, through the hand, through the track chairs. Which I wasn't expecting. But it's just something different. It's a bit of a sour taste, I guess, in the end. And as I said at the start, like, we didn't go in expecting to win. So we didn't expect anything from it. And we certainly had a great time when you go to the collect your numbers,
The expo and things like that.
Blows your way,
I can imagine.
And you look around, and you go, look at this, it's all for running, but there's stuff you could use as well.
And that motivates you as well, it still motivates
you. Oh, it's exciting,
you're still on the road the next day or the next few days.
But it's just the excitement, the build up. So it's great to be involved and aware of it. It's just a different way of looking at it, I guess.
Do a lot of the marathon majors do hand bikes as well? Yeah.
Except Australia.
You can't race a marathon in Australia.
No.
Yeah, right. But like Berlin, Boston.
Boston. Guy did an hour and five.
Yeah, hour five.
Guys in Europe, I think, Heidelberg, under an hour.
Yeah, right.
58 minutes.
Oof.
Most of the major marathons in Europe and in America have a hand cycle division.
Yeah.
And it's gaining more popularity, I guess, especially in America, because a lot of their return service vets are coming out and they're getting, not forces in the right way, but they're getting equipment. And a lot of them are getting into a hand bike to keep fit, keep motivated. Keep together as a group, they train together. And I suppose that's the idea of the Marine Corps Marathon. They all get entry into that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they've got a free week.
So really celebrate it
there. Yes. Oh, look, and it's great to hear them talk, and it's great to see them out there.
Yeah.
It really is. But something like that in Australia would be great, but it's just about gaining that momentum.
Yeah, and that awareness as well around the...
But it's just... it was a bit disappointing. Like when we finished, even the lady who runs Achilles, which is a disability group, which you have to enter through.
Yeah.
She said, how'd you go? Oh, I won. She said, really? I said, yeah. She said, where's second place? I said, I don't know, no idea. Yeah. And I was 8 minutes late or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's... a bit of a sour taste.
Yeah, a bit of a kind of a sideshow to the main event. Like, do you often feel like
it? Felt like it.
Yeah.
It really did. Like,
we're putting this on, we're ticking a box, and we're supporting you, but at the same time, we're not. Yeah.
In the end, that's how it felt.
Yeah.
And it probably shouldn't come across that way.
Mm. Yeah, well, if you're going to put it on, you should celebrate the same way you celebrate the other categories.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's the only category that doesn't win anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I read that on an article about you today. I think you did with ABC, just saying that, no prize money or anything. So the wheelies get prize money, the runners get prize money, but the hand cyclists...
Yeah, you guys get, I think, airfare, accommodation, prize money, watch.
Be about $200,000 for the win at New York or something like that, I'd say. Pretty good payday for those Kenyans and Ethiopians that take the win there every year.
But like, just an example, the top... wheelchair guys, they've got airfare, accommodation, appearance. They get well looked after.
Yeah.
And they work hard for that status as well. You know what it's like to get that level. They work bloody hard at it and are really, really good at it as well, you know. But you just like a level playing field, I guess.
Is there opportunities in, sorry to interrupt, but are there opportunities in the cycling world for races that you can go to get airfares and prize money and appearance fee and stuff like that?
Not in Australia.
Not in Australia, okay.
In Europe, you can do it.
Yeah.
It's a lot bigger goldfish bowl
Yeah.
over there. the biggest race in Europe, which is in France. They probably attract, I think they cap it at 250 hand bikes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So imagine trying to line up 250 hand bikes, open slather.
Yeah.
And it's like bang, full gas.
And this may seem naive, but is everyone who's entering in those hand bikes somebody with a disability and no use of their legs, or is it people who are interested in it and can get in the chairs and have a crack?
No, there is an open class.
Yeah.
So I think it's H0. Like we run H1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
H1 and 2 are for quads. 3, 4 and 5 are 3 and 4 for paras, different levels. H5 is basically amputees. But I think they have I think it's a H0, and that's for able-bodied people.
Yeah.
Who are interested in, like, you know, some of the manufacturers.
Yeah, well, inclusive's good, isn't it? Like, it's,
And they go hop in the bike, see what it's like, and you might find, oh, look, let's go for a ride, you know? Oh, I've got a spare bike, yeah, come on, we'll go for a ride. Yeah.
Company's good, yeah, conversation.
Exactly. So there is opportunity.
I'll flog you out down the road for a few hours.
Yeah, that's it. So there is opportunity. And it's good to have a camaraderie. Yeah, it's just, it'll gain momentum, but whether or not it'll gain enough momentum in Australia, I don't know. Yeah,
a generational thing, like just keep...
I think it's just a numbers game.
Yeah.
And I think it's the management accepting it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's just the way it's moving at the moment. Mm. Yeah. There's not a lot of... Well, there still is. I shouldn't say there isn't, but it just seems hand bikes are taking over more than track chairs. And it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Now, for a long, long time, track chairs were the most dominant things in athletics for people in wheelchairs.
Yeah.
Whereas now the hand bike seems to have just taken over that.
Yeah.
And you can deal in both.
And it's a Paralympic sport as well.
It is, yes.
So can you do the marathon at the Paralympics, or is it a 10K or track race?
No,
or
we have a time trial and a road race.
Yeah.
But it makes it really hard. Like, just I can only say from Australia's point of view, because Australian.
Yeah.
When you look at our structure, we have a track and a road. So if you can do, if you're a more able-bodied cyclist,
yeah,
with a disability who can do track and road, you have more opportunity.
So they'll pick you on a team because they can chuck you in the track, on the track and the
you
road.
You might be able to do two events, maybe
and
three
you're only
events.
Taking up one bed in the on the team.
And Ben, you know what it's like on a team.
Yeah.
So numbers.
Oh well, I haven't been on a team, but yeah, no, I study it closely. And
you have to.
We kind of look at it and we report on the podcast and things like that.
So, and you look at it, whereas with the hand bikes, it's really road.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's a tough. Although you might qualify, doesn't mean you'll get selection.
Mm.
And that can be a tough bit of pill to swallow.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Because communication isn't flash.
Yeah.
So when you read the guidelines and you see, if I've got a speed of 38 k's an hour that I have to qualify at, and I do a 39, I think, beauty.
Got the time.
Got the time. Done during the qualifying period.
Yep, ticked all the boxes.
Done it twice. Done it three times now. Yes. Why not get selected?
So is that all? Does it come down to selector's discretion then? Like, because you qualified to give the listeners some. You
can't
qualified.
Say, you can't.
Qualified for London and qualified for Rio.
Yeah,
but
it's such a
haven't
tough
been picked.
Thing to. When you're still in that mix.
Yeah.
Don't want to throw too much shit.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean?
But the black and white is that you're qualified and you haven't been picked.
Yeah.
And you'll keep trying to qualify and hopefully you do get picked.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've been on teams and gone the worlds and it's... as I said, I did deal with the devil last year.
Yeah, what do you mean by that? You mentioned that before.
I had a phone conversation with the high performance team. Do well at Nationals. And literally I got told the course at Nationals doesn't suit me.
Okay.
Because it's a hilly course.
Yeah.
Doesn't suit my style of riding, but the courses for World Cups and World Titles this year and next year and the year after are flat,
yeah,
which suit my style. And because I've been going so well consistently, you know, just do well at Nationals and you'll go away to Worlds,
yeah,
World Cups.
Got a spot for you.
Yeah. Haven't? No.
Because you've been in the world like three times before. You've been to Canada, Denmark, and then Canada again. Yeah. 2009, 2010, 2011.
Yeah, and then I made the qualifying time for... the next one was US. And then literally I beat the guy who... That would have been after... after London. And the guy who got silver in the time trial beat him in the road race.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, yep, I've qualified. I've done well.
Yeah.
No, I can't.
Yeah, right. Did they take him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I reckon I spent the next 2 years just...
Just motivated.
Just gobsmacked.
Yeah.
I did. I was just... Yeah, and you do. That does your head in.
Do you like have an opportunity to appeal or ask for reasoning or anything like that?
I had a two-minute conversation
with
the coach, the head coach. I reckon 90 seconds was him saying, you're not going.
Yeah.
And me just trying not to cry.
Yeah.
Like part of my role at the time was also around the national series.
Yeah.
So once he told me, I had to go up, present everyone, tell everyone congratulations, hand out medals, and so I kind of sucked.
Yeah, absolutely. I
did my head in. For 2 years, I reckon.
And how do you deal with that as a person? Like, do you use it as motivation and fuel for the fire? And when it's -2 in the morning during winter,
I really struggled. I really did. I struggled big time for a while, and then I just started doing more bunch rides and just chatting and
amongst the guys.
Yeah, and it just helped. Mm. Just break it up a bit and stop thinking too much about it. And now. I just I did my head in, like, you know, we had the phone conversation at the end of January this year, and I was a bit bitter towards the family. Not towards them, but I was just a bit annoyed.
Angry kind of mood, and people got to live with you and things like
and that. Because they knew about it as well. Yeah, you know, I told my wife straight away, and so she knew. And when I had the conversation, she was devastated for me, but it doesn't help the mood it puts you in, the psychological mind of it.
Yeah.
But now it's just a case of, we'll play again next year, Now, because our dates have changed and courses have changed, and now you've got your head around it. We'll play. We'll just keep playing, And
control what you can control as well. And
no, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's stuff that's outside of my control, so there's no point worrying about it.
Yeah, you can waste a lot of mental energy on that stuff, can't you?
I can.
Yeah.
I went to a shrink for that.
Did you? Yeah, right.
I did, yeah, mindfulness and all this, and you do, it helps.
Yeah.
It helped, don't think about stuff that you can't control.
Mm.
There's no point.
Yeah.
Just control what you can control, because it's what you're in charge of.
Mm.
And just put your best foot forward.
Mm.
Yeah. That's sometimes easier said than done, because you do have to do the early K's or early miles, and it can be cold, it can be wet, it can be hot. But sometimes, that's what you're in control of.
Mm. We're going backwards in the Michael Taylor life story here, but take me back to the accident. You were 34,
motorbike accident. I was an electrician by trade, and I was coming back from Ocean Grove, Brown Hollows. And literally, I was coming back to get ready for work. And just literally, I would have been not even 4Ks from home.
Living at Kerrang at the time?
No, we were in Buller. We were in Melbourne.
Okay, yeah, right.
So between Diggers Rest and the airport.
Yeah, outskirts there, yeah.
Yep. And no idea what happened. Don't remember the accident. But from talking to the police, they tend to think I was clipped by another vehicle. They found my driver's side mirror like 200 metres back. I think, we think you've been hit, but this couldn't prove anything. So, and again, don't dwell on it, because I can't remember it.
So no one came forward or anything, though? Like, just found you on the side of the road or something?
Pretty much. All I remember is I woke up, there was a police officer standing above me, and I was in my leathers, and my phone rang, which was in my jacket.
Front pocket, yeah.
And the police officer answered it. It was my dad. And he couldn't say too much, just that I'd been in an accident. And then my dad rang my sister, who's living in Ocean Grove, My sister went around to my wife. You know, I'm only been married 9 months. Mike has been in an accident. What? What are you talking about? You've been in an accident? When? Yeah, she had no idea.
Especially when you hear motorbike accident as well, because there's not much protection from
there's not much
everything
at all.
Else, yeah.
And it wasn't like... the good thing about it was the police said, you know, there was no speed involved. It was just an accident.
Yeah.
Yes, we think there was somebody else involved. We don't know. Can't prove it, but it was just an accident. So, it makes me feel a bit better in that aspect. I wasn't anything stupid. But the wife was 6 months pregnant. So, a lot going on. So then, I missed the helicopter ride to Alfred. I missed that. Heard the blades, but that was about it, you know. And then I woke up the Alfred, and then I got taken to the Austin.
Yeah.
And then I spent a month there. Real emotional roller coaster.
Oh, I could imagine.
Like your life gone.
1 minute you're coming home for holidays, the next minute you're in the helicopter and stuff. Like
it's not over. The hardest part is like you can't do anything. In a way, I was lucky when I was in the Austin. I was in a room with four other people, and the guy directly opposite to me was a quad. He'd been in the chair quite a while, and at night time, everyone else is asleep. What do? You talk. So he was great. I could ask questions and try and get your head around.
So at this stage, did you know that you wouldn't have use of your legs?
No, you're
the
still
doctor's
hoping.
Talent. Yeah,
you're
okay.
Still hoping.
Yeah.
Like they'll come in and I'll say, oh, look, you know, it could be spinal shock and it's still early days. And then when you're laying in bed, you know, your foot would move and your toe would twitch and you say that.
Got something.
And the nurses are just, you're right. No, move, you know?
Yeah.
And you really clinching at anything because you have to, you know.
Hope's a big thing, isn't it?
Oh, and look, after a month of watching the walls, you know, of the room, you go a bit stir crazy. So then from there, you get transferred to Royal Talbot, part of the Austin, which is rehab. 3 months there, learn how to do. You felt like a baby, you know, because there's so much you need to learn. Like, you can't even dress yourself. You've got to learn how to go to the toilet again, medication, physio. You're so reliant on your legs that you don't realise. How to do a chair.
So at this stage, they're like, you're in the chair, like there's no...
Well, you need to, I suppose, get ready for that.
They get you, start
so
you down that path.
Yeah, yeah. So you start practicing wheelchair skills and there's a lot of demeaning stuff that goes on because it has to.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go to the toilet? Oh, yeah, you got to do this, you got to do that. I can't feel that. Nurse is going, oh, I'm glad.
Mm.
I'm thinking, oh, okay. But you learn to cope and deal with it, and some of it's not pretty, some of it you make it look easy. It just varies, and I think it depends on your personality after a while as to how you take it on. Yeah, and there's some people who I know who still struggle to accept it, and you hate to say, but depression is a big thing. Yeah, and how you deal and how you cope and who you blame. There's no one, you can't blame anyone, you know, but some people just don't accept it.
Did you go through different headspaces there, or was it like pretty defined?
I was lucky.
You were straight away
I
accept this.
Getting
to New York.
No idea as to why. I've been asked that many times. I couldn't give you a definitive answer as to why. I just said, look, that's it. Let's just get on with it.
Yep.
It just clicked.
Do you think because your wife was pregnant as well and expecting a child at that time, like did that almost distract you and give you
a bit of perspective
as well?
It was a great distraction because while we're at the Royal Talbot, aren't we? You have to get doctor's checks and buy baby stuff and we had to go buy different baby stuff. And again, why don't I get a chair in there? How do I bathe the little kid? How do I nurse it? My daughter's first 2 weeks was still in the rehab hospital.
Yeah, right.
So we actually got to go see the birth. So, you roll in there, you're all gowned up, and the doctor's looking at you going, you want to check? Yeah, mate, yeah, it's all good.
Yeah.
No, it's just, so it was great. It really was great. You know, it took your mind off things and gave you something to focus and look forward to, you know. And then to go back to the hospital, you know, that new baby smells like a new car smell until I throw up in it. But no, that was great. And being the last 2 weeks of my rehab, I suppose just made it sweeter. But you have just got to learn a lot, and I suppose you just adapt.
Mm.
You just have to. But there's lots of pinfalls along the way, lots of crashes. I fell out the chair a few times, and
How long did it take you to find the hand cycle stuff?
When I was an apprentice, I met a guy on a train, actually, and we started chatting, and I had a bike with me, just to ride from a train station to the depot, which is about 5 k's or something. And then we just started chatting away, and he got me into riding. So when during my apprenticeship, I'd race down at Footscray and whatnot, and then when I was at the rehab hospital, they have these come and try days. So all these different people have come in with different sports. A guy with archery uses his toes. Bikes, water skiing, snow skiing, motorbike riding. Look, there's no sport you can't do.
That's pretty good, isn't it? It's they bring different. That in, though, isn't it?
Like, it is. It's great. You know?
Did your eyes just light up that day? And you're like, which one am I going to have a crack at?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. It really is. It's kid in the candy store.
Yeah.
And especially because, like, you think everything's taken away from you.
Yeah.
To see it all unfold, and you're like, oh, well, I can still do all that.
Yeah.
And you don't realise how much opportunity there is to do things. Yeah. So it's really a great incentive. Wheelchair basketball, wheelchair rugby. Look, there's so many. You can still go swimming and swim like a brick, but I can still go swimming. So there's so many different things. And then, the handbike came along. I thought, like this. Oh, this is really cool. Started riding around the gym. And I thought, I could do this. And then we eventually got one. And then once we got it home, it was quite funny. I think my first ride, I'd gone like a kilometre. I thought, oh my God, what have I done?
Arms are aching.
Oh, my shoulders.
Heart rate through the roof.
Oh, I had no idea about heart rate then. No idea. I was lucky to go just, come turn me around. I'm done. And then I usually like to tell a story where my first race, my first nationals I went to on this bike, and I thought, I've been training well. I've been doing great, you know. But I'm going to go there. I'm windy. So I'm doing really well, you know. And it was at, in Perth, Kings Park. Got flogged, absolutely smashed by 37 minutes by a guy called Peter Allen. It took me years to catch him. Absolute years. We get on great now. But, look, the first race, I'm going to go, I'm going to go really well here. I'm going to do really, really well. I went really, really bad.
Yeah, but sometimes that's good, isn't it? To get smashed and
done. No, it was. It was great. Yeah. It was a great look. Now I look back at it and... seeing how far, what they've done and what they do, and it's a learning curve and a great way to meet new people, and especially being new to a chair as well. So it was a good opportunity to say, how do you do this, how do you do that, and different perspective. Made different bikes, and how long you've been in the chair, and all the questions that you can ask. And you find the people in chairs are really open. Yeah, there's nothing really off limits. It's quite a case of what do you want to know? Okay, this is how I'd explain it to you.
Yeah,
and it may not be in the best terms, but you'll get the gist of it, you know. And everybody uses basically the same products and the same things, but some of them just might have a different technique of doing it. And everyone's quite open to it. So the hand bike, seeing other people in hand bikes was great. I had to transfer out of that. Oh, no, I couldn't do that. Oh, it's just practice. Really? Yeah, you put your foot here and you twist there. And, tried that once and fell out and had to call the wife to come pick me up off the floor. And, you know, the hard way, you know. But you do, you try, you go home, and everyone's quite happy to show you different things. And, I reckon it took me a good 4 years to catch Pete.
Yeah, right.
And I pinned him back and pinned him back and pinned him back. Poor bugger, don't seem for dust now.
And did you find, like, people in general would be often a bit standoffish about not wanting to ask the questions, whereas you'd be happy to talk about it, but...
Yeah, it's a funny one. Well, when we first had the accident, you lose a lot of friends.
Mm.
And I think it's a case of...
Well, do you figure out who your real friends are?
A bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit of both. But some came back, and I think it was more... just not too sure how to approach it.
Mm.
Yeah, you're definitely not the same person. Like going from 6'1", you know, I was 110 kilo, mm. or 103, 105 kilo, to 4 foot down.
Mm.
But it's just chalk and cheese. And quite a few friends have come back now that they can see that you're more mobile and not as fragile.
Mm.
Whereas that when you first had the accident, not too sure. I had a few people wanting to ask questions but not knowing, but had others, I suppose they just didn't know how to cope,
yeah.
didn't know what to do, didn't know how to, and they just drifted away, and that's okay. Yeah, that's the way life goes.
Have you noticed that's changed though? Like more the years that go
on,
people are more approachable.
Well, see, I suppose now people...
Accepting.
People see me in a chair.
Yeah.
Yeah, people... We met. I was in there already.
Yeah.
So it's quite no different. That's how you met me. So the hardest part was getting inside the front door.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's how now you see me, how you've met me. If I saw us to stand up and walk in, you'd be like, who are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's... I suppose the perspective I look at now, people just see me in a chair.
Because were you into sport and like keeping yourself fit and healthy and motivated before the accident?
I've been self-employed.
Yeah.
Working
pretty hard.
Yeah, and just time.
Yeah.
I'd get out on the mountain bike or go for a walk. But when I was an apprentice, I was great. Yeah, I lived in Sunbury. I'd cycle out to Newport and home, for work. Once you work for yourself, it's just different dynamics.
Mm.
Yeah, but once I had the accident, it was kind of like, well, I like the idea of this, yeah. And I mean, you could have chosen many sports, it was just one that attracted to me. So, and you kind of like just run with it.
Mm.
Yeah, you meet a lot of people on the way, a lot of fantastic people, some not so fantastic, but still willing to give you time.
Mm.
And you just gotta, I don't know, just move on and just accept it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Have you learned a few things about yourself over the years?
I'm a stubborn bastard.
Which would be a good trait to have.
No, it is, but it's hard on wife and daughter sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you're hard on yourself.
You expect that excellence kind of...
I do.
Yeah.
My daughter does cheerleading. And
how old's your daughter?
She's 14.
Yeah. Oh, would she have a sports star dinner? She was taking photos and stuff. I remember that.
Well, she's 5'11" and 14.
Yeah.
So she's tall. But I'm... Because I'm driven... Yeah, like I'll get out in the ergo and smash out 50, 60 Ks at 4 o'clock in the morning because that's when my training is, you know?
Yeah.
If she's not putting 110%, I'm riding her.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you doing? Come on, girl. Come on, girl. Come on, what are you doing?
She's 14, yeah.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, she's tears.
She wants to watch Netflix.
My wife's going, he's up. I'm even, but it's just... You're just passionate.
And you want her to get the best out of
yourself.
You do. Make the most of all the hours.
No,
and
that's exactly right. Yeah. You spend all this time and you think, look, and that, at the end of the day, you just want, as long as they do their best and the best of their abilities, that's all you can ask, you know? And that's all you want. Mm. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's sport, school, work, as long as you do your best and put your best foot forward, I'm a happy camper, but you just wanted to put their best foot forward and do their best. Don't give me 90%.
Mm.
You know, I ain't got to wash too well, you know. I don't expect it. You know? If I go racing, I don't expect it. So if you go training and give me 75%, 80%, 90%, yeah.
Yeah.
Fire up, girl, yeah. But, my temperament, yeah, it's a family thing and it gets hard, so yeah, she cops it a bit.
Yeah.
I cop it back off my wife. Who's that? So it's a fine line. So that, especially leading up to a big race, it's worse because you're so switched on.
Mm.
You know, you just Yeah, the family conversation is very short and sharp then. Mm. Like heading into New York, I think you're over there, like, you know, you're up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, doing laps around Central Park, come home, you're just waking them up.
Yeah.
Let's go have some breakfast. And then you got to go sightseeing because you're there. You don't want to waste the opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're already tired and you're leading up to this big race. So you're getting a bit edgy. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, I can't think what it was. Bailey wanted Starbucks, and we were over at that time. And it was Starbucks on every corner. It's like, oh, it's such a little thing. And it was, you know, it's such a little. It's kind of like, oh, man, I went off my nut, you know. And after about, you know, 2 minutes, I've gone, dickhead, what are you doing? Yeah. It's only Starbucks. It's only coffee. Yeah. Yeah, you get a coffee, that's fine.
I know what you mean. One of our co-hosts on the other podcast I work on, the running one, he had a race coming, a marathon over in Japan two weeks ago, and he was. We were trying to change recording nights, and he was getting very short with us. Oh, and just that, we all know the feeling though. Like, it's a week before the race. Right. Don't throw any spanners in the works.
No, that's right. And my wife knows. My wife and daughter know, but it's kind of like you got to live with it. Mm. Yeah, and the same as your partner.
Yeah,
yeah. You just got to ride it out for that week, and once it's done. Yeah, the emotional drain, you can just see it. Yeah, it's like, oh,
yeah,
it's done. You know, on both parties, you know, because you're zooming off.
100%,
yeah. Yeah, you've done your training, you put all your things, everything, oh, you ticked all your boxes, put everything aligned to succeed, and you've done everything you can.
Mm.
Yeah, so you're emotionally going, done.
Mm.
Yeah, you checked in, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, where your partner and your family are going, just get out the door. It's all good. We're good. Yep.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. We've got to go to do the race or get the job done, but they've got to sit on the sidelines and be the supportive.
It's a tough gig.
Yeah, 100%, I agree.
It's such a tough gig, you know. I mean, I know when we travel, like, you know, you've got to take a pit crew. Like, it's not like being in the chair, you can carry, like, you know, we had this big bag I was carrying, and they all had bags, but then you got the hand bike, which is about 2 metres long, spare wheels,
a tool kit and stuff. I'd have to say
You take a little bit, take a little bit, but like you got a kit bag, for all your race gear in there, helmets. So someone's got to carry all that crap.
Yeah,
and then the poor family. Yeah, and you're trying to negotiate your way through New York, and they're all getting short and sharp, and don't hit the bike, don't hit.
Yeah,
and at the end of the day, like, fuck my boy, you know. Yeah. they just we're always there. Yeah, and then once we finished New York, we had a funny one. A mate of mine had done the trip a few times, and he goes, oh, when you get to LA, because we spent a week in LA afterwards, he goes, check the bike in at the airport. He goes, I'm just going to hire a car. I said, sweet, fantastic, you know, no worries. We get to LA, luggage isn't there, right?
Nah.
But the bike is, so yeah, I was going, all right, now, can we check the bike in? No, I can't do that anymore. Really? Oh. So we hired this car, didn't really fit the bike.
Yeah, right.
So here we go, let's pull the bike apart, fit wheels in.
Yeah.
And literally my wife did a fantastic job. We were leaving because we had more luggage.
Yeah.
So I reckon it took an hour to pack the back of the bike.
Just
pack
in the airport car park.
Oh, unbelievable. We went from the hotel to get some breakfast, which is about K down the road. Had to repack the car. And there's a guy in a car right next to us. And he's watching my wife pack the car. And I reckon after an hour, he's gone, geez, you did well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, there's no way knowing I could have done it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she got it in there, she'd be able to shut the boot on it, and think, oh, gee, the bike, everyone's in.
Yeah.
And we could only fit the wheelchair. So it's like, not bad at all.
Hats off to the support crew.
Oh, I'm not wrong, yeah. And it wasn't any frustration, it's like, yeah, we're all done.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, you can't do it without your family, you can't do it without, you know, people helping you, and it's, not just the race day, it's the training as well.
Mm.
It's a long, it's a long journey just to get there.
Well, I'm sure you think about them when you're in training and it's early. No, you don't. No. Don't use them for a bit of motivation when you're out on the roads.
No, because you're in better sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you want to do them proud and stuff.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. When you're going for a big race, yeah, you play the mind games.
Yeah.
What
can you draw on to get the best out of yourself?
Yeah, oh, definitely. And you have to, I think. I think every athlete does. But, yeah, when you're training all that, they're in better sleep.
Yeah, want to be in their position.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But, like, and I say this to a lot of people, unfortunately, the groups that I've led to ride in, which are bit more pacier or on earlier in the morning. So if you don't get up and do those rides where you're getting pushed, I not that I get pushed, I get dropped. So it's more motivation that to push harder to get back onto them and stay with them. But they're on early in the morning. It's like, man, this just sucks. Why can't you do pro hours or something? Start at 9, but it doesn't work that way. These guys all work, which is cool.
What time do they go out in the mornings?
Usually it's most would be 6 o'clock start.
Yeah.
Which means
you spend a bit of time in the dark then.
Yeah, but for a person in the chair, you're up at 4:15.
Time
to go to the toilet, get dressed.
You're not rolling out the door and just straight on the bike,
No, you can't just jump up. Everything takes time. Rolling around on the bed, putting bike nicks on, you think, oh my God, don't fall out. Don't wake up the missus. Don't turn on too many lights. And it's just a case of everything takes a process. And then if I can get out of that garage by 5, then I go do a warm up for like 45 minutes, and then you got to go to the toilet. Because you've been moving around, so then your bladder wants to go, hello. You go, oh, not now. You go, all right, go find somewhere discreet, so you go to the toilet, and then you've probably got 5-10 minutes before the bunch starts, So you're already done, 16, 17, 18 Ks.
Before they've
started.
A lot of those guys wouldn't warm up though, would they? Or they just ride to the...
Just ride there.
So with a group run, we kind of use the first 2 or 3 K as a warm-up kind of thing, which is nice. So,
But they're, the difference is, because it's a faster bunch, their pace is a lot quicker.
So they use that as we're going hard for 90K or whatever, not we're going to stuff around for 20 and then kick it home for 70.
So their pace, it might be quicker than what I'm used to. So I've just got to work harder to stay with them. But for them, it's like, this is pretty cruisy. And then they start to line up for the sprint. I'm going, hey, wait for me. Hey, hello, I'm back here. They're just pace. So you just got to work harder to stay with them, which is okay.
Well, that's what you're there for in a way, isn't it? Like to get dropped try hard.
You can change groups and take an easier route. Or you can just go up a group and work harder. And it works. Some days you will go back to a group. And it just it varies on what you're doing in training, I guess, on your workload.
It's a good lesson in life to get out of your comfort zone and put yourself up against people that are going to tear you up.
And get absolutely... I go in one group and I'm lucky to do like the first 5K of them. And then they're gone. I go up the hill and halfway up the hill, they change the pace on me. And the arms versus legs syndrome. The legs change pace a lot quicker than the arms do. Once I go back a gear and start spinning, and all of a sudden they bang it up a gear and they go, oh no, not now. We're going up a hill. And you think, crap. So way out the back. I just pull out to the side and just watch them go past and you think, no, I'm not going to get back in on the downhill. Like, I'm faster downhill. But their pace going uphill. So you're on the hill longer than what you are going downhill. So there's no way knowing how to get back on. So you just think, oh, this is crap. I was going to put the headphones in and just go hard to a time trial. And sometimes it gets frustrating like that.
It's fascinating, though, for us, especially runners, to hear about, a bit of an insight into the cycling world as well.
It's different. I suppose the same theory, but just different. You can change groups. You can do different different ways of going about it. Different techniques. So many different ways. More than one way to skin a cat.
100%.
So you just got to look at different opportunities, different things that are out there. And especially now, especially in the cycling world where you've got Zwift. Indoor trainer?
Yeah, I've seen a bit of that popping up on Strava. I think you can do it running now on treadmills and you can be virtually running and speed and it's been popping up.
That'd be different.
Yeah.
But the treadmill on the bike, it's popular. And I was only reading, I think it was a bit of a joke thing this morning, but there was like a Zwift anti-doping thing. And it's more to do with... they work on power to weight ratio.
So people have been doping and getting on there and
they changed all the smashing people. No, they changed their if you're racing at I think it's say 3 kilo per watt, but then you want to if you're in that category, but then you go down to say you might go up to 3.5 kilo per weight, so you're in a different category.
Yeah,
so you got more advantage, so they can change your power output.
Yeah.
So I think they can juggle it like that. So
yeah. Interesting.
I'm yet to get into it too much.
It's probably a good thing to stay. Yeah, stay real. Stay with the blokes and the.
Oh well, that's it. It's kind of, we start putting into my training program. But I can do it, you know. But it's kind of like, in this type of weather and climate. Why would you want to train indoors?
Yeah.
When you can go out in a bunch ride and get the same result.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, let's just cut that out and go out and do a bunch ride. It's a bit more social.
Oh, it's the same with running it on a treadmill. Like, you take a group or just outdoors any day of the week.
Oh, that's right. And especially in the climate we live in.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's nice up
too.
In Dubai, I can tell you.
Yeah, it's always nice up in Echuca, however.
Oh, Bendigo's not bad.
Bendigo's all right. Bendigo's good. A few more hills down there. I was down there last weekend just trying to get some hills in.
Yes.
But,
that's the big difference, the hills.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when you come up here, it's open.
Yeah.
But it's just flat.
Yeah.
That's the only downside to it.
Yeah, it is. It's the only disadvantage we've got.
It is.
Everything else is good.
It's fantastic.
Just need some hills.
Yes. More than one.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than one. A decent hill. You know? It's kind of, it's the toughest part, but it's just one of those things, you know. Bendigo just has that little bit of advantage in that aspect.
I always ask the guests to finish off if they've got a life quote or a mantra or a philosophy.
Well, as I said it before,
that they try to live their life by.
Just do your best.
Do your best.
I say to my daughter all the time, have fun. Because if you don't have fun, you're not going to want to do it.
Yeah.
Enjoy what you're doing. And do your best. I tell my daughter all the time, just have fun doing it. But just go hard at it.
Do your best.
Do your best. And if you're not going to do your best, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
You've got to enjoy it, but you will just do your best.
Yeah, enjoy it in the first place and then do your best at it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to, otherwise you just, I don't know, they just go together.
Yeah. Pretty good way to finish on. Can the listeners look you up on the internet? Strava? Where
Strava,
are we? Instagram?
Strava, Instagram.
People are half interested.
Facebook,
what can they do?
Oh, yeah, it's all there. People follow me on Strava and they just go, oh, yeah. You look at miles, I do I've got a couple of guys I ride with me at the moment. And go, oh, I think I was ahead of you last week. Oh, wait, really?
How many Ks are you guys talking like a week?
On a big week for me, might be 470 Ks.
Yeah.
By my arms?
My 160 running looks pretty soft compared to that.
I might do, usually on a Tuesday and Wednesday are my big days.
Yeah.
So 110. On an easy recovery day, which is usually Monday, between 70 and 90.
Yeah.
But it's an easier pace, obviously.
Yeah.
Saturdays is a good one, a good smash fest.
Yeah.
Get flogged.
Yeah, it always is Saturdays, isn't it? I think in every sport, Saturday you go hard.
Yeah, it's a football crew. Yeah. That's how I play Saturday. Strava, more than one, just go for it.
On there. Beautiful. And we'll put all your handles and stuff in the show notes. And, I really appreciate that you sat in the car for an hour to drive up here today. And
it's not like it's hard to do.
But still, it's time.
We've been meaning to do it for a long time.
We have been meaning a bit of Facebook message tag going on. But, it's good to finally get it done.
It's been timing, more than welcome,
Thanks, mate. Thanks for being so open with your time and stuff.
No worries.
Sharing all those amazing stories with us.
Oh, anytime.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for listening, guys, and I hope you enjoyed that one with Michael Taylor. Just a quick few announcements. I've been back trying to write some more blogs. That's exactly what I used to do before I was spending my time podcasting, and I really want to get back into that as well. And over at my website at the moment at bradytrailful.com, I've just been writing away and trying to put a few things into action and making that a bit of a goal going forward to be consistent with my blogging. So feel free to check that one out. Michael would also like to thank his supporters and sponsors. Sometimes when we do these conversations and tell me your tales, you get so deep in conversation and you kind of forget to do all the nitty gritty kind of thanking of all the sponsors and acknowledging the people that have helped you out. So I'm just going to run through a couple of his sponsors here, and I hope that I don't stuff it up, I suppose. So he'd firstly like to thank his family, Tina and Bailey, and his mum and dad and brother and sister for all their support, the TAC. Aaron from BR International, Rothwell Lawyers, Ivy Projects, Ben Bell Financial, the Echuca-Malama Cycling Club, Jacanzi, Bendigo Cycling Centre, and Achilles Melbourne and International. Got a stack of sponsors, got quite a village surrounding him, so that's probably why he's so successful. So thanks to those guys for supporting Michael so he can do amazing things, so he can come on the podcast and share his amazing stories. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of your day, the rest of your run, whatever's going on in your life. Cheers.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.